how do you lead with need in mediations? Let's go to the bench.
Legal news, information, and interviews from Collins & Lacey, a leading South Carolina defense firm for construction, workers' comp, hospitality, retail, trucking, professional liability, mediation, government, and ethics matters. The views expressed by the guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect that of Collins & Lacey, its management, or employees. This is The Legal Bench.
And welcome to The Legal Bench. I'm Michael Burney, Director of Business Development for Collins & Lacey Defense Law Firm in Columbia, South Carolina. There's been much discussion of the reptile theory with regards to one approach from some plaintiff attorneys. Hear much more about that theory in our podcast dated November 6, 2020. But for today, recorded live from the South Carolina Captive Insurance Association Annual Conference, Collins & Lacey Defense Attorney Robert Peel has a special guest to discuss one tactic for countering a reptile theory approach during a mediation.
I'm with Rick Farlow, and his company is named Healthcare Providers Insurance Group Company. Rick, thank you for being with me today, and kind of tell me what your company does.
Sure. Thank you, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here. Healthcare Providers Insurance Company insures a majority of the hospitals in the state of Mississippi. We have expanded our risk retention group now into nine states where we insure physicians, hospitals, and other types of healthcare providers.
And how long has it been in existence?
Healthcare Providers Insurance Company has been domiciled here in the state of South Carolina and been in business since 2003.
Great. And we just heard a fabulous presentation that you gave along with Drew Graham about the reptile theory and how it started and what insurance adjusters can do in order to combat the reptilian nature of plaintiff lawyers now. So tell me, how long have you been dealing with the reptile theory, you think?
I would say, even though the book that we showed you in the presentation was published in 2009, we first encountered Don Keenan in about 2007. I briefly alluded to a trial that I sat through with Mr. Keenan. I believe that was 2010 or 2011, the year after the book came out. So we had a very unique opportunity at the first of the reptile approach when he just wrote the book to watch it, you know, come together over about a 7-week trial. So we got to observe him in trial, and I literally, as a claim handler during that point, my career sat through every day of the trial, and it was an amazing experience.
Okay, it is amazing, and defense lawyers have been trained and warned and have learned tactics and ways to deal with some of these reptilian lawyers. And you suggested some ideas in your presentation. And one that I took away was just don't swap at mediation, just don't swap money. Tell me how you should approach mediation from a claims adjuster perspective in a catastrophic type case.
Yeah, our approach has always been we're going to assume the burden for working up the damages piece of the case. So we're going to fully understand what the plaintiff's real damages are before we ever go to mediation. And by doing that, that puts you in a silent position of strength. And so with your team back at your shop, whether you have to report to a claims committee or a vice president of claims or whoever you report to, it's very key to strategize on what you know the damages are and to have your steps planned out for mediation. And by that, I mean, what is offer one going to be and why? What is offer two going to be and why? And however many offers you decide you're going to make during that mediation, you have that planned out. And so your offers, you lead what we talked about in our presentation, you lead with need, and those offers are attached. That money is attached to a need for the plaintiff. And you don't, because they make a demand, you just don't respond with an offer without attaching it to a need and discussing the purpose of attaching it to a need. And so thus the theme that we came up with, lead with need, and you get out of swapping money. That has always been one of my pet peeves. If you just swap money, then you land in the middle and the value gets driven up.
Definitely in mediations, everyone's looking at the midpoint. And that's what their mediator is saying, that's where the case should settle, even though the insurance adjuster might not have the money for the midpoint. But I hear that all the time, and I like the phrase, lead lead would need. And I, one thing that I did take from your presentation was, you know, even if you're just trying to admit that the plaintiff, you know, can work again, you know, I mean, they physically can do it. And if you get that concession, then it cuts down the value of their case. And I thought that was a great example of that. I've run into that several times.
We debated the number of examples, because a presentation can turn into war stories if you're not careful. But we thought the example that we encountered in California was a perfect example of leading with need. And one more final comment about mediations that I will tell, and it addresses a lot of young claim handlers because they don't understand, or they just haven't been around long enough to see it, but there is power in no. And it takes experience to learn how to say no. And it takes the guidance of the defense attorney as well, because if you have a claim handler that's in the field and they're reporting back to somebody in the shop, right, and they don't understand the color of what's happening in the room or what's going on, there has to be a lot of trust developed between that operation and the defense attorney. And there has to be a timing of, at some point in time today, we've got to be prepared to say no and stand up and walk out. And there's power in no, because that allows you to reset the floor and stop the value of the case from being driven up in that mediation.
So what would your advice be to claims handlers who have to deal with the lawyer who has the great reputation as being a great plaintiff's lawyer and uses intimidation in order to try to get his point across?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, as we talked about in our presentation earlier, was confidence. And you have to be able to change the conversation with the mediator, and you have to be able to change the level of confidence in the room to shift it back to you, where they know, again, they know where the money comes from. And if you shift that conversation, that you can come in as powerful as you want, but I control the money, and I control when I can say no, and I've got everybody's support here in this room. I have I've got my people back at my shop's support. I've got the defense attorney's support. And so if you can control that conversation and shift the dynamics, because they're going to come in, we've all seen them, right? They're going to come in with their entourage. They're going to come in with super egos, lots of money. And you got to get past the intimidation factor. And there has to be, I think, across the country, a sort of training of our claims industry of how to encounter that and not be intimidated by that. And understand, you're the one that controls the money. Yes. And so therefore, that should change your confidence level and change how you approach the mediation.
I think a training session on that would be good. Typically, South Carolina's a small state, so we know the lawyers who try that tactic, and we've seen it once or twice. So it does us no good, maybe, but it would be for the, you know, the adjuster has not encountered the particular reptilian, aggressive, come at you intimidation tactics that some plaintiffs' counsel like to use.
And I think a part of that, Rob, also is understanding what the claim handler in the trenches is going through. And as the defense attorney, you also have to sort of know their shop and know what goes on back at their office and know the personalities there. Because when they're in the field, even though there's a confidence level, there's no way around it. You're in a legal setting. So at some point in time, you're the last stop. You're the defender of the situation. So, you know, you have to work with them. And so that may involve educating the people back at the shop at really what's going on in this room, in whatever small city you're in South Carolina or whatever town you're in. Here's what's happening. And just making sure that everybody from the home office or the regional office to the claim handler, this is the powerful plaintiff attorney we're facing, and that everybody on that side of the house is aligned.
And one last thing I want to talk to you about, and I've been going to seminars for the past couple of years, and this point has been mentioned, and I think it's a really good one. Defense attorneys and claims adjusters need to put out an anchor number in order to anchor the jury or to compete with whatever the plaintiff's number, what they're asking for. Kind of explain what you mean by anchoring the number or anchoring.
Well, one of the ways we've approached it, again, is we talked about it in the presentation, is the burden has shifted in our view to the defense. And in the past, the plaintiffs the defense has sort of followed the plaintiffs on how they would work up damages, because in a med mal case, it may be different than a trucking case or some other industry, but you apply the same principles. You know, they're going to start out and they're going to work on standard of care first, and then they're going to work on damages, I mean, causation, and then they're going to get to damages. And first thing you know, you're at 18 months or 24 months out before you ever talking about damages. So you don't have a chance to anchor that number early because you're way down the road. So you find yourself with not even all the damages depositions completed. You're trying to complete them and go to mediation next week. So you don't have a chance to really educate everybody to get that anchor number out. So one of the things that we've pushed is trying to get the damages within 180 days, if at all possible, and push hard to try to get that and understand it, even if you have to do your own independent workup, and then to start to float that number to the other side. And the defense attorney and the claims handler has to be absolutely aligned on what that means and what that number is and where we're trying to go, because you've got to start to float that number to the other side. And sometimes it may be a part of the strategy that the defense attorney has agreed with the claims handler, hey, before we ever go, I'm gonna start floating what we're thinking about this case. I mean, you're at $5 million and we're thinking this case is more like $800,000 because of XYZ.
Right.
And so you have to try to get that number out and anchor it. And then the other thing that we've learned is that whatever damages you work up and what your anchor number becomes, you've got to be prepared to stick to it. And you've got to, like I told you earlier, there's power in no. So you've got to be prepared to get to your anchor number, justify it, and then be prepared to walk from that mediation. So just getting that number out early and leading with need to talk to, you know, people back at the insurance company, the mediator, whoever you can get an audience with to start to talk about the real value of the case is our approach.
Well, Rick, thank you for joining me today. I think this was very interesting and informative for our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob. I appreciate the invitation, and thank you again for having us at the conference.
And for the latest legal news and information of interest to South Carolina businesses, join us right here for the next episode of The Legal Bench.
You've been listening to The Legal Bench from the South Carolina defense firm, Collins & Lacey. Learn more at collinsandlacey.com.